Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:09 PM at the Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 14th. I thought we'd kick off today with the pound versus the euro. We've had a little bit of backing and filling where the majority of the big move that we had in the last 2 days of last week has been sustained. The price is still above the trend mean, but of course, in a broad ranging environment, the trend mean is less important than it would be in a broad trending environment. When we think about what are the likely outcomes here, well, obviously the UK has made some concessions and the EU has said they're not enough, and that increases the potential that we're going to have either a last minute deal, or the UK will apply for some additional time and hold a general election. But what we can certainly see is that the pound is back at the upper side of the base formation, and investors are probably a little reluctant to pay more than 115 for the pound because there is still this uncertainty. So that, I think, is a factor in the weakness, but not a downward dynamic that we've seen, but rather just some pause around this level. Then we obviously had that very big move on the FTSE 250 last week, and it was in mildly negative territory today. It is testing this 20,000 level where it has been pausing for most of this year. There was the potential that 20,000 could have been support back in October of last year. That did not turn out to be the case. I do think that the index looks better supported than it did back then, right now, but it is going to have to sustain the move above 20,000 to reconfirm a return to demand dominance. Then when we think about what's going on in terms of the USA, well, today's Columbus Day, so some businesses are shut, the market was not, but we did have a quiet day, and the S&P continues to pause here around the 3,000 level. Over the weekend, there was some speculation that the Chinese are not fully signed off on the first phase of a trade deal, and that they do want some additional confirmation and discussion before there is a clear agenda set for the summit that could be held in Chile towards the end of the month. And of course, we are at the upper side of the range, so there is some pause and consolidation here. I think Japan is one of the more interesting markets right now because it is at the crossroads of two rather important themes. The yen has been particularly strong because of safe haven demand, and that has put downward pressure on the stock market, whereas at the same time, the Japanese market is very internationally oriented, so if international trade were to improve, then that should be positive. But the most important thing that the Nikkei is doing is finding support here in the region of the trend mean. It has broken its sequence of lower rally highs since the end of last year, so there is the scope here for some additional upside. The second section index has also pushed back above its trend mean. It was in additional positive territory today, and this has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and that's been going on since January of 2018. So that's a long period of underperformance. One thing we can certainly look at and draw some comparisons with was the first move back above the trend mean in 2016. It had been trending down from the peak in 2015 for about a year, but when it did break out, it really went on a romping bull market and almost doubled over the course of the next 18 months. So the performance of this index is really worth monitoring from the perspective of a Japanese investor. The Chinese market continues to steady from the region of the trend mean. I think it is probably more appropriate to look at the CSI 300, and that is again firming from the region of the trend mean, coming back towards this 4,000 level, which has been an area of resistance now over the course of the last 4 years. So it really does need to sustain a move above that 4,000 level to confirm a return to demand dominance. But some of the risk is coming out of China with the prospect that there will be a deal agreed to China's exports to the USA have been trending down. That's certainly supports my experience looking at customs warehouses last week. But the broader picture is that demand for vehicles, for new vehicles, has been down for 15 of the last 16 quarters, and that is obviously taking a toll on the Chinese automotive sector. And that's just one of the big industrials that had been viewed as a no-brainer in terms of growth back in 2017, but has subsequently given up about 60 to 70% of the value of these shares. Now the question is, what's a more realistic view of the potential growth rate for vehicle demand in China? It's obviously going to be a challenging environment when the government might be running a fiscal deficit in the region of about 4%, but they're not stepping on the traditional levers of stimulus, which is basically to provide a great deal of credit and liquidity to the infrastructure and the housing sectors, which then boosts the shadow banking sector in turn. They're worried about a bubble in the property market, and they don't want to further inflate it. So that is a recipe for an additional difficult environment in China. Now, one thing that I think is starting to look rather interesting here is that the Baltic Dry Index had pulled back in the last few weeks, but it did steady last week. And there is the potential here that it is going to be able to sustain this move up and away from what is essentially a 9-year base formation. But what we're starting to see a lot more of is interest in the Baltic Dirty Tanker Index. This has been a very substantial breakout over the course of the last week in response to US sanctions on COSCO Shipping, which owns the majority of China's large or very large crude carriers, in other words, oil tankers. The last time we've seen prices approaching these levels was all the way back between 2002 and 2008, which was coincident with a very significant move in oil prices. This is rather different. It's more about the trade war. It's more about a really just a tax, an administrative tax on consumption. That was one of the questions that I think is rather difficult to answer from an economics perspective. We know that spikes in the oil price tend to be really very swift and compelling taxes on consumption, and they do anticipate recessions. The oil price, though, was down $1.30 in here today, and it looks like it is going to go down further. This does not look like a bullish chart. So eventually we are going to see, if these tanker rates persist at these higher levels, we're going to see that refiners pass on the additional costs to consumers. That's obviously a much more important factor for the consuming nations rather than the producing nations, and particularly for the USA, where they have a great deal of onshore domestic supply. This is not going to be as significant a factor. Of course, it's a much more important factor for Europe, and Europe is already in a recession. So when we think about the impact of some of these increasing costs, then it's coming on the back of a rather significant move we've already seen in carbon credits. Now, carbon credits have pulled back somewhat over the course of the last couple of months, but they are still back in the region of levels we have not seen since 2008, and back towards 2005. And this also represents a headwind to consumption. This is a tax on consumption. These guilt taxes that are being imposed, they represent a challenge for the industrial sector, and the rising cost of shipping is also a tax for the consumption sector. What we are seeing, though, is that this pop in shipping rates is providing welcome relief for the highly depressed sector of the other tanker owners outside of Costco. So Nordic American Tankers has completed its base formation last week, and it is up approximately 100% in the last 2 weeks. Frontline, which is also trading at really rather depressed levels, particularly relative to the levels it used to trade at before the crash, then it is coming back up towards the upper side of its base. Then we have Scorpio Tankers. Well, they don't just do tankers, they also have dry goods shippings, or shipping vessels. So that is does not have the same base formation as the other companies, but it did trend down for 4 years and now has broken that downtrend. Of course, these are highly cyclical, and we do anticipate that we should get some kind of inflation scare. We have not had an inflation scare. There is really no sign of it just yet. What we are starting to see, though, is that people are beginning to think about how much value is represented by treasury bonds at 1.5%. We've had a massive move on the upside 4 weeks ago. We had a big pop again on the upside on the yield last week. This is, I think, consistent with top formation development in terms of the price, and it looks like we're seeing clear evidence of some support coming through for the yield around this 1.5% level. That does suggest that there is the potential we're going to see yields push back up towards the upper side of that range. The big question that is outstanding for a lot of people is, in which way is this breakout, these ranges that have formed over the course of the last 21 months, in what way are they going to break out? Well, we know that US GDP is probably around 2%, or perhaps a bit more than that, and the 10-year yield is at 1.7%. So GDP is still above the 10-year yield. That represents a stimulus. The Fed funds rate is at 2% and the 10-year yield is at 1.7%, so that is already pricing in an additional rate cut. But the one thing that is nobody's willing to price in at all is that we could have some inflation starting to pick up. There is the potential that we're going to see wage demands starting to also increase here. And I did draw down this chart here today. It's a year-over-year measure, and it is not an all-encompassing measure, but we at least we have lots of back history. And what we can see clearly is that it has been very difficult for wage demand growth to exceed 4% in any of the last few hiking cycles. And it's currently around 3.5%. So what that suggests is we are late in the cycle, but we're probably not yet at the end of the cycle. The inverted yield curve suggests that we have a relatively lengthy lead indicator for the end of the cycle. It does suggest that at some point over the next year and a half, there is going to be a stronger recession risk, but it is not a pressing risk. We also know that we are in the third year of the US presidential cycle. We're in the second half of that. That is generally when you do get a pop on the upside. The fourth year of the cycle is generally the best performer. So that is also something that is worth considering. And then we also have the fact that the major indices, whether we're talking about the Dow or the NASDAQ or the S&P 500, they're all still trading above their trend means, and they're within very close striking distance of a push on the upside. It's also worth considering, I think, that this is reasonably consistent with the kind of environment we've had over the course of the last decade. There have been lengthy ranges, and they've been resolved on the upside following reversions back towards the 1,000-day moving average. So I think that's one of the big touchstones in terms of the long-term view for this secular bull market. You would really need to see a sustained move below the 1,000-day moving average in order to confirm that this secular trend is in fact over. That doesn't mean that we're not going to have occasional bouts of volatility, and there will be medium-term corrections. We've just had one. It's lasted 21 months already. But the much bigger question is whether that represents the end of this cycle, or whether we are late in a medium-term bull market, but perhaps halfway through a secular bull market. One thing that I think a lot of people will be looking at is the fact that gold prices have been popping on the upside. Now, we are still in this consolidation phase. Gold prices were pretty much unchanged in here today, and silver was in mildly positive. The fact that the price has been going sideways for the better part of 2.5 months now has allowed it to unwind more than half of the overextension relative to the trend mean. The formation of a first step above the base is a very welcoming characteristic in terms of a base formation completion, because it confirms that there is a new source of demand, that investors are willing to buy at levels that haven't been seen in nearly a decade, and that does confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. As long as the price is holding the $1,400 area, we can conclude that this is still a new bull market for the precious metal. Palladium prices have pushed on to an additional new high, having confirmed support in the region of $1,600. This continues to be a very powerful bullish move. Of course, it is clearly highlighting the underperformance of platinum, and most particularly the relative comparison. At some stage that is going to turn around, and the argument for retooling to deploy platinum in catalytic converters, it becomes more pressing the higher palladium prices go. When we look at the copper price, it was in mildly positive territory today, but it unwound an earlier decline. It is unwinding this short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean. The continuous commodity index is also a little bit steadier in here today. It does need to push back above the 400 level. If it can do that, well, then it will have broken the sequence of lower rally highs. One thing we can certainly say is that a large number of commodity plays are at very depressed levels. That's clearly true of the tanker sector. The fact that Mosaic, for example, as a fertilizer company in a bear market for the agriculturals themselves, is right at the region of the lows put in 2017, and even those lows are considerably or at least they're in fact below the low put in 2008. In fact, we haven't seen lows like this since the base breakout in 2006. So we definitely have depressed conditions in the resources sector, and it is quite normal that we should start to see these things do better if we are in fact in the latter stages of this medium-term bull market. We haven't really seen it yet, but there is the potential that if this initial trade deal does get done and people are still unwilling to bet on it, that it is going to represent a bullish characteristic for the agricultural sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.